It's pretty incredible, isn't it, how much longer we're all living these days, like thanks to medical advancements and all that. But living longer is awesome, but it also kind of makes you wonder, like, how are we going to make sure our money lasts as long as we do, especially in retirement? I mean, the idea of outliving your savings, that's a pretty scary thought for a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. That whole concept of longevity risk, as they call it, can really put a damper on what's supposed to be, the golden years, the time to finally relax and enjoy yourself.
Exactly. And that's precisely why we're going to really dig into annuities today. We've got this super detailed document, almost like a whole chapter, just dedicated to explaining these things. Our goal today is pretty simple. We want to break down what annuities actually are, how they function, the different shapes and sizes they come in, and ultimately how they can help tackle that fear of, well, running out of money before you run out of life.
Right. We're aiming to give you that clear understanding of the core mechanics of an annuity. We're going to be pulling straight from the fundamental principles laid out in our source material here. And at its heart, it's about establishing a reliable income stream, something you can count on throughout your retirement so you can really enjoy those extra years without constantly worrying about finances.
Okay, so let's get right into it. At its most basic level, what is an annuity's primary job? What's its main purpose?
The main goal, as we've kind of touched on already, is to create a consistent flow of income during your retirement. It's a financial mechanism specifically designed to address that longevity risk we talk about, that chance of using up all your savings simply because you live a longer, healthier life than you maybe anticipated.
Makes sense. Now, this document we're looking at starts off with a pretty interesting analogy. It calls annuities upside-down life insurance. Can you unpack that for us? What does that comparison really mean?
It's a really clever way to think about it. So with life insurance, it kicks in when you die. It provides a lump sum payment to your beneficiaries, your loved ones, so it protects them financially if you die too soon. And it can be a way to sort of build an estate for them. Annuities, on the other hand, are all about those years when you're alive, specifically in retirement. You put in a chunk of money, either all at once or gradually over time, and then it gets converted into a steady stream of income, often for the rest of your life, through a process called annuitization. So in a way, while life insurance helps you create an inheritance, annuities help you manage and essentially spend down your own assets over your lifetime.
Okay, I see the contrast. One pays out at the end, the other pays you while you're living it up in retirement. Now, the material we has here breaks down an annuity contract into two distinct phases. Can you tell us what those two key stages are?
Absolutely. The two main phases are the pay-in phase, sometimes called the accumulation period, and the payout phase, also known as the annuitization period. And it's super important to grasp that these two phases can't overlap. They happen one after the other.
So, what happens during that initial pay-in or accumulation phase? What's going on with your money at that point?
This is where you're actively putting money into the annuity. You, as the owner of the contract, are making those premium payments. You can do it all at once with a lump sum or spread it out over time with regular payments like deposits. And while your money's sitting there, it's growing based on the interest that the annuity earns. And a key point here is that during this accumulation phase, you usually have a good amount of control over things. You can often add more money, maybe take out some if you need it, though there might be some fees involved, which we'll get to later. You can even surrender the whole annuity and take its current value. You can even make changes to the contract itself. So it's a period of growth and flexibility.
Got it. So it's like building up that retirement nest egg. Now, what changes when we move to that second phase, the payout or annuitization phase? What's the shift there?
Once you decide to annuitize, the whole game changes. The money you've accumulated, everything that's built up in there, gets transformed into that regular stream of income payments that you were promised. And at this point, a lot of that flexibility you had during the accumulation phase vanishes. You can't put in more money. You can't really take out more than your scheduled income payments. And you typically can't just cash out the annuity or change the terms. Basically, the insurer is now holding your money, and they're legally obligated to pay you that income stream based on what you agreed to. So you're moving from a period of building and managing your money to a period of receiving that steady income.
That sounds like a pretty significant transition point where the reins are handed over. Now, who are all the different people involved in making an annuity work? Who are the key players in this whole process?
There are four main parties. First, you've got the contract owner. This is whoever buys the annuity, plain and simple. They have all the big decision-making power, like choosing who the annuitant is, who the beneficiary is, how the money will be paid out, adding or withdrawing funds during that accumulation phase, and even surrendering the whole contract if they want to.
So they're calling the shots. What about the annuitant? What role do they play?
The annuitant is the person whose life expectancy is basically what determines how much money they'll get and for how long once the annuity starts paying out. It has to be an actual person, and they have to sign off on the contract. But they don't have the same level of control as the owner when it comes to things like withdrawing money or changing beneficiaries.
Okay, so the owner is the boss, and the annuitant's lifespan is the guide for the payments. Who else is in the mix?
Then there's the beneficiary. This is who gets whatever's left in the annuity, or a death benefit if the annuitant kicks the bucket, you know, passes away. The beneficiary doesn't get to make any decisions about the annuity while the annuitant is alive. It could be a person, a trust, or even an organization. And last but not least, you've got the insurer. This is the financial institution, usually an insurance company, that issues the whole annuity contract and is on the hook, legally responsible for actually making those payments as promised. You might deal with them through a bank or a financial advisor or directly through an insurance agent. And it's worth mentioning that in a lot of cases, the contract owner and the annuitant are the same person. Like if you buy an annuity to provide income for yourself in retirement.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's probably pretty common for those to be the same person. Now, our information distinguishes between immediate and deferred annuities. What's the core difference between these two?
The main difference is when that income stream starts flowing. An immediate annuity, sometimes called a single premium immediate annuity, or SPIA for short, is designed to start paying you relatively quickly after you buy it. It could be within a month or up to a year, depending on the specific contract. You make a one-time lump sum payment, and then boom, the income starts coming in. A deferred annuity, however, doesn't start paying you right away. It's meant to start at a future date that you get to choose. So immediate annuities are for when you need that income pretty much now, while deferred annuities are for planning ahead for income later down the road.
So one's for current needs, the other's for future planning. Okay, let's dive a bit deeper into immediate annuities. What are some of the defining features there?
With an immediate annuity, as I mentioned, it's usually a single lump sum payment up front. Your money then grows tax deferred, meaning you don't pay taxes on the earnings until those payments start. And when you do start receiving those payments, a portion of each payment is considered interest earned and is therefore taxed as ordinary income. But the rest of the payment is considered a return of your original investment, your principal, and that part is tax-free. So every payment you get has both a taxable and a non-taxable portion.
So it's a mix of taxable and tax-free money in each check. All right, let's switch gears to deferred annuities. How do those work in terms of contributing and accessing your money before you actually retire?
Deferred annuities give you more options for funding. You can go with a single premium deferred annuity or SPDA with a lump sum, just like the immediate annuities. But you can also choose a periodic or flexible premium deferred annuity, sometimes called PPDA or FPDA. With those, you make regular payments over time, kind of like paying premiums for a life insurance policy. It could be monthly, quarterly, or yearly, whatever works for you. The point is, with deferred annuities, the focus is on accumulating money over time for your future needs. Now, unlike immediate annuities, with deferred annuities, you can usually take out some money before you retire, although you might run into those surrender charges that we talked about earlier. And you don't have to annuitize a deferred annuity at all if you don't want to. It's your choice when, or even if, you want to convert it into that regular income stream.
That ability to take money out early seems like a big difference. But we also need to talk about those penalties and surrender charges that you mentioned. Let's start with the tax implications of withdrawing money from a deferred annuity before you're actually receiving those regular payments. What do people need to be aware of there?
When you take money out of a deferred annuity before it's annuitized, any earnings, basically any growth on your original investment, are taxed as ordinary income. And that's the case until you've withdrawn the total amount that you originally invested. But here's the kicker. If you withdraw money before you turn 59 and a half, the IRS hits you with an extra 10% penalty on those earnings. So you've got the regular income tax plus this extra penalty, which can be a pretty big chunk of change. The bottom line is that deferred annuities are really meant for long-term growth. Taking money out early can cost you a lot because of the taxes and that extra penalty.
Yeah, that 10% penalty definitely sounds like something you'd want to avoid if at all possible. Can you give us a quick example to show how the tax on those earnings would work in practice?
Sure. Let's say you bought a deferred annuity for $20,000, and after a while, it's grown to $45,000. If you decide to take out some money at this point, the first $25,000 you withdraw, that's the difference between the $45,000 it's worth now and the $20,000 you put in that's considered earnings. You don't have to pay income tax on it. And if you're under 59 and a half, that $25,000 in earnings also gets hit with that extra 10% penalty from the IRS. So yeah, early withdrawals can really eat into your savings.
Ouch, that makes it crystal clear. Now, what about those surrender charges? What's the reason behind those? Why do insurance companies have them?
Surrender charges are basically fees that the insurance company can slap on you if you withdraw money from a deferred annuity during a certain period of time, which is called the surrender period. It's a way for them to discourage people from taking money out early, and it can last anywhere from a couple of years to more than 10 years, depending on the specific contract. These charges are spelled out in the contract, and they usually start pretty high, maybe 7% or even 10%, in the first few years after you buy the annuity. Then they gradually go down each year until they eventually disappear. It's like the insurance company is saying, hey, we're planning for your money to grow over the long haul. If you take it out early, you're messing with that plan, so it's going to cost you.
So it's like a sliding scale of fees for early access. Can you give us a real-world example of how those surrender charges might play out?
Sure. Imagine you have a deferred annuity worth $10,000, and the surrender charges start at 7% the first year, then decrease by 1% every year after that. Now, most annuities also let you take out a small percentage, usually around 10%, every year without any surrender charges. So let's say in the first year you want to withdraw $5,000. Well, the first $1,000 of that, which is 10% of your $10,000, is free and clear. But the other $4,000 you want to withdraw gets hit with that 7% surrender charge for the first year. That comes out to $280. So you get your $5,000 minus the $280 surrender charge, leaving you with $4,720. It just goes to show you how early withdrawals can shrink the amount you actually end up with.
That's a good illustration of how much those charges can matter. Now, our material also mentions a death benefit with deferred annuities. What's that all about? Is it similar to a life insurance payout for your beneficiaries?
It's important to remember that the death benefit in a deferred annuity isn't the same thing as a life insurance death benefit. It's basically a feature of the annuity that kicks in if the owner dies during the accumulation phase, so before they start receiving regular income payments. In that case, the money in the annuity goes to the beneficiary. The amount the beneficiary gets is usually either the total value of the annuity when the owner died or the total amount of money the owner put into the annuity minus any withdrawals, whichever is greater. It's a way to ensure that your loved ones get at least what you put in plus any growth if something happens to you before you start getting retirement income.
So it's like a safety net for your principal and any growth if you don't live to see the annuity pay out. What if you don't specifically name a beneficiary for the annuity? What happens then?
If you don't choose a beneficiary, the money in the annuity usually goes to your estate. It'll get divided up according to your will or state laws about inheritance. So it'll end up somewhere, but naming a beneficiary directly can make things a lot simpler for your loved ones.
Good point. Now let's move on to that payout phase. Once you've decided it's time to annuitize, what are the different ways you can receive that regular income?
The payout options for annuities are kind of like the settlement options you see with life insurance policies. They generally fall into two categories: life annuities, which are guaranteed to keep paying you as long as you live, and temporary annuities, which pay out for a set period regardless of how long you live. The information we have focuses mostly on life annuities, so let's stick with those for now.
Sounds good. Let's break down those life annuity options. What are the different types people usually have to choose from?
There are a handful of common life annuity payout options. First up, you've got the life-only option, sometimes called a pure life annuity or a life-no-refund annuity. This one usually gives you the biggest monthly payments because the payments stop completely when you die, no matter how soon or how far down the road that is. The advantage is that you get the most money every month, but the downside is that if you die relatively young, you might not receive as much in total as you put into the annuity. It's kind of like a bet on living a long life to get the most out of it.
So you're taking a gamble on longevity for the chance at bigger payouts. What's next on the life annuity list?
Next, you have life with refund. With this option, if you die before receiving back everything you put into the annuity, the difference is paid to your beneficiary. It's a way to guarantee that your original investment is returned either to you over your lifetime or to your beneficiary if you pass away sooner.
That sounds like it provides some peace of mind. What's another popular life annuity choice?
Life with period certain is another common one. With this type, you get income for as long as you live, but it also guarantees that payments will continue for a set number of years that you choose when you annuitize, like 5, 10, or 20 years. If you die before that period is over, the payments keep going to your beneficiary until the end of that period. But if you live longer than the guaranteed period, you'll keep getting those payments for life, but the beneficiary won't receive anything after you die. It's a way to combine lifetime income with a minimum guaranteed payout.
It's like a safety net for both you and your beneficiary. Now, what about annuity options for couples or multiple people?
We have joint life annuity options. The first one is called Joint Life and Survivor. This one's designed to provide income until both annuitants are gone. It's often used by married couples, so the surviving spouse keeps getting income after the first spouse passes away. When you set up this kind of annuity, you can often choose whether the payments will stay the same for the survivor or be reduced to a percentage of the original amount. It's a key way to make sure a surviving spouse has financial support.
That seems like an important option for couples planning their retirement together. What's the other joint life option they mention?
The other one is called joint life. This one only pays income until the first of two or more annuitants dies. While the initial payments might be a bit higher compared to the joint life and survivor, our source material actually advises against using it as a joint annuity. The reason is that once the first person dies, the income stops completely, leaving the survivor with nothing from that annuity. That kind of defeats the purpose of having a joint annuity in the first place, which is usually to provide income for whoever lives longer.
That makes total sense. You usually want at least one person to keep getting that income. Now, what actually determines how much money you'll get each month with a life annuity? What factors go into calculating those payments?
A bunch of factors come into play. One of the most important is your age when you annuitize. Generally, the older you are, the higher your payments will be because your life expectancy is shorter, statistically speaking. So the insurance company figures they'll be paying you for less time overall. Conversely, if you're younger when you annuitize, your payments will probably be lower because they're expecting to pay you for longer. Yeah. Another factor that's been historically considered is gender. Women, as a group, tend to live longer than men, so women often get slightly lower payments than men of the same age. But it's worth noting that using gender in these calculations is a bit of a hot topic, and there have been some legal changes around that in some places.
So age and historically gender has been key factors in determining those payments. What else influences the amount?
The type of payout guarantee you choose also matters. Options with more guarantees, like life with refund or life with period certain, will usually result in lower monthly payments compared to a straight-up life-only annuity. With period certain, the longer the guaranteed period you pick, the lower your payments will be because the insurance company is locked in to paying for that minimum amount of time no matter what. And finally, the assumed interest rate that the insurance company expects to earn on the money in the annuity also plays a role. A lower assumed interest rate usually means lower payments for you because they're projecting less investment earnings to contribute to those payouts.
Okay, so it's a combination of your life expectancy, the guarantees you choose, and the interest rate environment. Now, our material breaks down annuities into four basic types. Can you walk us through those and highlight their key differences?
Absolutely. Even though there are tons of different annuity products out there, they generally fit into four main categories: fixed annuities, variable annuities, equity indexed annuities, and market value adjusted annuities. Understanding these basic types is essential for navigating the world of annuities. It really comes down to deciding where you want the risk to be. With the insurer for stability and fixed annuities, with yourself for potential growth and variable annuities, or somewhere in between with indexed and MVAs.
Let's start with fixed annuities. What are the defining characteristics of those?
With a fixed annuity, the money you invest is protected from loss, although you have to watch out for those surrender charges if you withdraw early. These annuities are backed by the insurance company's general account, which means they're taking on the investment risk. The money in the general account is usually invested in more conservative things, like government bonds and corporate bonds. During the accumulation phase, fixed annuities earn a certain interest rate that's declared by the insurance company, usually once a year. And this rate is guaranteed to never go below a minimum rate stated in your contract. When you annuitize a fixed annuity, it pays you the same dollar amount on a regular schedule. So the good thing is that it's safe and predictable, but the downside is that while the dollar amount stays the same, inflation can erode the purchasing power of that money over time.
So it's steady income, but it might not keep up with rising prices in the long run. How do variable annuities differ from fixed annuities?
Variable annuities have the potential to grow faster and keep pace with inflation because their value is tied to the performance of investments like stocks and bonds. Historically, these types of investments have tended to grow more over time, but it's important to understand that there's no guarantee of positive returns, and you could lose money. The big difference with variable annuities is that you, the contract owner, bear the investment risk. Your money isn't guaranteed against losses in the market.
Variable annuities are backed by a separate account because insurance companies aren't allowed to take on the investment risk associated with these types of annuities. If they did, potential losses could affect their ability to pay out on their more guaranteed products, like those fixed annuities we talked about. With a variable annuity, you get to choose how your money is invested among various options within that separate account. And these options are called subaccounts. It's like having a basket of different investments, maybe some stocks, some bonds, and you decide which baskets to put your money in. During the accumulation phase, the value of your annuity is tracked in accumulation units. And when you annuitize, those units are converted into a fixed number of annuity units. The number of annuity units you have stays the same throughout the payout phase, but the dollar value each unit will go up or down based on how the investments in that separate account are performing. This means your income payments or retirement from a variable annuity could increase if the investments do well, but they could also decrease if the investments lose value. And one more thing. Because variable annuities are directly linked to investments, they're regulated both as insurance products and as securities. It's called dual regulation. This means anyone selling them needs to have the proper licenses and registrations and is required to provide potential buyers with a prospectus before they buy.
That dual regulation really emphasizes the investment risk that comes with variable annuities. What about equity indexed annuities? Where do those fit in?
Equity indexed annuities, or EIAs, are often seen as a sort of middle ground between fixed and variable annuities. They're tax deferred, and the interest you earn is linked to the performance of a particular stock market index, like the S&P 500. But they also have a guaranteed minimum interest rate, usually somewhere between 1% and 3% if you keep the annuity for the entire surrender period. This guarantee protects your initial investment from market losses. The idea is to give you some potential for higher returns than a fixed annuity by letting you participate in some of the stock market's gains, but with a safety net through that minimum interest rate. Now, because of the costs involved in providing those guarantees and the way the interest is calculated, the potential returns from an EIA are usually not as high as what you might get with a successful variable annuity. EIAs are considered a type of fixed annuity, and their guarantees are backed by the insurance company's general account, not a separate account.
So, you get some upside potential tied to the market, but you also have protection for your initial investment. And finally, what about market value adjusted annuities or MVAs? What are the key things to know about those?
Market value adjusted annuities, sometimes called modified guaranteed annuities, are another type of fixed annuity that gives you more flexibility in choosing how long the guarantee period lasts. They often offer potentially higher interest rates if you're willing to commit your money for a longer period. You can usually choose from different guarantee periods, and longer terms often come with higher interest rates. The interest rate you're guaranteed is locked in for that entire period, as long as you keep the investment until the end of the term. One important feature of MVAs is that if you need to withdraw money before the guaranteed period ends, you might have to pay a contingent deferred sales charge, CDSC, and/or a market value adjustment, MVA. The market value adjustment can either increase or decrease the amount you get back, depending on whether interest rates have gone up or down since you bought the annuity. The CDSC schedule is usually tied to the length of the guaranteed term you chose initially.
So it's a chance for higher returns if you're in it for the long haul, but there could be some financial adjustments if you need your money early. Now that we've got a better understanding of the different types of annuities, what are some of the most common ways they're actually used?
Annuities can be used for a wide variety of financial needs, both by individuals and within company retirement plans. For individuals, the most common use is to generate income during retirement. With people living longer, a lot of folks are looking for guaranteed income streams that they can't outlive, and annuities are a good way to achieve that. They're also often used to accumulate funds before retirement on a tax-deferred basis, meaning you don't pay taxes on any earnings until you start taking money out later on. Flexible premium annuities are a popular choice for funding IRAs, offering a tax-advantaged way to save for retirement over time. And some people even use annuities to save for education expenses, taking advantage of that long-term tax-deferred growth.
So they're mainly for retirement income, but they also serve other long-term savings goals with tax advantages. How are annuities used in the context of company retirement plans?
In employer-sponsored retirement plans, annuities are often used as a vehicle for employer contributions to employee retirement accounts. And the payout options within these annuities can provide a stream of lifetime income for the employee and their spouse after they retire. Lastly, it's important to know that annuities can be used in both group and individual settings. Individuals can buy annuities directly for their personal retirement planning, but employer-sponsored plans might use group annuities. In those cases, the retirement plan itself owns the annuity, and the specific benefits for the employees are outlined in the plan documents.
So there's a lot of flexibility in how they're used. Now, as we wrap things up, what would you say is the most important thing for our listeners to take away from this deep dive into annuities? What's the key message we want them to remember?
The bottom line is that annuities are financial tools designed to help you avoid outliving your savings. They do this primarily by offering a way to create a guaranteed stream of income, especially during your retirement. They give you a way to turn a lump sum of money or series of payments into a reliable income stream that could potentially last your entire life, providing some real peace of mind when you're facing an uncertain lifespan.
And we've really explored the whole life cycle of an annuity today, haven't we? From building up your savings during the accumulation phase to converting it into that regular income stream during the annuitization phase.
Exactly. And we've talked about who the key players are in the annuity contract and look at the main categories of annuities out there, from the security of fixed annuities to the growth potential and risk of variable annuities and those hybrid approaches of equity indexed and market value adjusted annuities. Each type has its own features, pros and cons, and it's important to consider those carefully based on your individual financial goals and how much risk you're comfortable with.
So, for everyone listening, as you think about your own financial timeline, your hopes for retirement, and your comfort level with risk, what aspect of annuity planning seems most relevant for you to explore further? Are you drawn to the steady income of a fixed annuity, the potential growth of a variable annuity, or maybe the middle ground of an indexed annuity? This deep dive has given you a solid foundation, but remember that more research and a conversation with a qualified financial advisor can help you tailor this knowledge to your specific situation. They can help you decide if an annuity makes sense as part of your overall financial plan.